So I'm going to talk about causal discovery and using common entropy. So I'm from Purdue in the US. I'm in the EC department. And this work I started during my PhD, towards the end of my PhD, and finished it later. List of authors, some of them are my PhD advisors, some of them are collaborators from UT Austin. Okay, so this part is going to be just too basic for this audience, so I'm going to do this very, very quickly. First question is, how do we model proxy causation, right? And the way, at least I use PERS model, is as follows. So let's say you have two random variables, X represents potential population, who has access to clean water, and let's say Y represents child mortality rates, right? So what does it mean when you say X causes Y? So you need to first establish that definition. So if you have a magic wand, right? Let's suppose that you have a magic wand, you intervene on X, let's say you set to take the value of 100, then you ask the question, does the distribution of Y change after my intervention? So I make sure everybody on Earth has access to clean water, right? So what happens after that? In that hypothetical universe, I do expect to see a different distribution for Y, right? So this is how you would establish, at least theoretically, X is said to cause Y if intervening on X would change distribution of Y. Okay, so then again, everybody is familiar with this, but you can take your set of structural equations and you can put them on a graph, or you can represent the functional relations in a DAG structure, and this is called the causal graph, right? So the one assumption we make is that this joint, the set of exogenous variables are jointly independent, or NPACM, i.e., would be the abbreviation, as Ilya pointed out earlier. That's the model we are assuming. So what happens when you intervene? You intervene. Essentially, you remove all the incoming edges to that node in the causal graph. So you effectively change the causal structure, which is actually how we learn causal graphs normally if you could perform interventions. Okay, so I'm going to actually skip quite a lot of this. So here all I'm saying is that if you see dependence, this could be explained by either a direct edge between two variables or a common cause that you don't get to observe, in this case, going to college, versus your income at 30 being above 50K, maybe confounded by your parents' income. Okay, or maybe the reality is somewhere in the middle. You have all the edges, but the strength of these edges change, right?
Or maybe going to college decreases your income at 30.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. It could also reduce the income, yes.
Right to me.
It is possible, depending on the college you go, yeah. Right, so how do we establish causation? Again, if you could perform randomized experiments, you essentially split your data, subjects into half and force half of them to go to college, force half of them to not go to college. Forcing is important. That's essentially removing all the confounding effects, and then that will cut off this edge effectively. So any dependence you see will be due to causal relations. I'm doing this very, very fast, but I do like to keep things interactive, so feel free to just ask questions. I'm just not expecting a lot of questions in this part. Okay, that's it, actually. Good. So, yeah, so that was a very quick motivation and introduction that wasn't needed for this audience, but regardless. So, causal discovery and common entropy, let's see how they are related. I'm going to slow down, don't worry. This is not how I'm going to present the whole talk. Okay, now, so here is the problem. I have two graphs. Okay, so I'll call this left-hand side the triangle graph, and right-hand side the latent graph. The question is, can I distinguish these two graphs from data, okay, from observational data? Now, Z is an unobserved confounder, and everybody is using different shapes, apparently, for observed, unobserved. You guys use triangles, I learned, right? I use circles, and for the latents, maybe I use a square. So can we distinguish them from observational data? The answer is no. You can induce the same set of joint distributions by them, by both of them, if you have no restrictions. Right? So the question we'd like to answer here is that, what if the unobserved confounder is simple? Okay. So now you need to ask the question, what do you mean by simple? What does that even mean? So we can try to formalize that a little bit. So to sort of encapsulate two different results, I'm going to call this notion of simplicity, or measure this notion of simplicity via Ray entropy. Okay, so let's say the Ray entropy of this confounder is small.
Edward,
yes.
Are you going to speak to why you're using the Rennie entropy in particular?
So there are two results that I can establish. One can imagine a convex a spectrum of that, but which I haven't done. So I want to leave that option open, right? So I don't have results for arbitrary ring entropies, but I have results for two special cases, right?
I see. So it's sort of the fact that you can prove things that motivates the choice of those entropies.
Right. So I'm going to be more interested in the Shannon entropy, but I think it's an interesting question also to talk about different ring entropies. Okay, again, very high-level stuff, two variables. Now, when you have this graph, of course, you have this condition dependence relation. X and Y should be independent given Z. The only problem is you don't observe Z, right? So the question we need to understand is, how does this graph manifest itself in the observed distribution P of X, Y? Okay? It really does not, but how does it manifest itself when Z has, let's say, small support size? This would be Rényi order 0, right? So this is very fitting to this workshop already, right? So the small cardinality latents, one of the topics we discussed. So what happens in this case? The footprints of the latent graph. Of course, you can write the joint distribution with marginalization. And then what can I do? I can put this in a matrix, P of X, Y. Now, these are all discrete. I think I forgot to say that. And let's say categorical even. Right? And this joint distribution matrix, I can write as a convex combination of a bunch of rank one matrices. Okay, so that is not hard to see, because condition on Z, P, X, Y are independent. So that's just a vector, outer product with another vector. So you can write the joint distribution matrix in the form of a non-negative matrix factorization. So this will go both directions. What does this mean? And again, just to be more clear what I'm saying, this would be the way to establish that. You can do local normalization to get to a distribution for X given Z and to get to a distribution for Y given Z. And the diagonal of the middle diagonal matrix would be the marginal of Z. So this gives you one way to construct or one way to fit your data, which is P of X, Y, onto this graph. Right. What does this tell me? This tells me that the non-negative rank of a matrix, of this joint distribution matrix, gives the minimum support size for the confounder. Okay. Because non-negative rank, by definition, is essentially this factorization where you have the smallest number of dimensions for this middle matrix. That's the definition of NMF. So what do we want to do now? We just established that if the true graph is this graph, underlying graph that generated my data is this graph, then this joint distribution matrix has non-negative rank of at most the support size of Z. Okay. How about the other direction? Suppose my data comes from triangle graph. If I want to do discovery, and if I would like to use Rényi 0 or the support size of C as a measure, as a metric to decide between these two graphs, I need to show a lower bound on the right-hand side. Right? So what can you show? You cannot show much in general, but let's make an assumption. Let's suppose that we are looking at a general position problem, which means that, let's say, I sample each conditional distribution in my causal model, including the latent, uniformly, randomly from the simplex. Okay, so what does that mean? That means P of X given Z for every value of Z is going to be sampled uniformly from the probability simplex, corresponding dimensional probability simplex. Same for Y. Y given XZ for any realization of X and Z is going to be sampled uniformly from the simplex. This you can get with Dirichlet prior, right? So here's the theorem. Suppose this happens, this is the generative model I'm assuming. Then this joint distribution has non-negative rank, minimum of the support size of X and support size of Y with probability 1. Okay? So this is not a very difficult to prove thing. So you are just saying that the chance that your joint distribution will align itself in a way that you observe a condition-dependent statement has probability 0. Okay? All right, so what does it mean for me for causal discovery? Now, we have established the left-hand side, we have established the right-hand side under a generative model assumption. Then I can say the following corollary. If the support size of my unobserved confounder is less than, strictly less than, the minimum between the support size of x and y, then we can distinguish these two graphs with probability 1. Okay, again, under the same generative model assumption that I'm not repeating in the slide. Okay, so what is the issue here? The issue is that this uses NMF rank. NMF rank is NP hard to calculate. Okay, so that's not going to be nice. What if I could use a smoother measure? What if I could use entropy? Now, let me assume, change the assumption, let me assume that the entropy of Z is small, Shen entropy. I will ask the same question. How does such a causal structure manifest itself in the observed distribution when Z has small entropy? And after some work, we did realize that this was already discussed in the information theory literature, and it's called common entropy. So what's common entropy? Given the joint distribution, P of xy, find the Z, third variable Z, with minimum entropy, such that x and y are independent given Z. This is shown by G of xy, which is essentially entropy of this variable. For information theory folks, this is related to Wiener information, but not exactly the same thing. There's a difference. Okay, so finding common entropy is equivalent to fitting your data to this causal graph and then looking at the entropy of that Z. Okay, which means that since common entropy by definition is the minimum, entropy of the true confounder in your data upper bounds common entropy. Okay, so similar to the cardinality case, now I have established one direction. I'm going to come to that direction in a minute. The closed form solution for common entropy for binary observed variables is established by Kumar et al., citation there, in 2014. But the general problem is actually very hard, although there is no formal hardness result as far as I know. So this is not turning out to be an easier problem, but maybe we can still do something. Now, going back to this picture, in the latent graph, we established that common entropy is upper bounded by the entropy of the true confounder. Right? So you can get some idea about the confounder maybe using common entropy. That's what we are trying to do. What can we say in the other direction? Suppose my true graph is a triangle graph. What can I say about common entropy? Now, again, since I don't have a closed form expression in general, this is a very difficult problem. But for binary variables, we can establish the following theorem. For binary xy, not with probability 1, but with high probability. So all but a vanishing fraction of models from the triangle graph has g of xy greater than h of z in the limit. So it's a limiting statement. As entropy of z goes to 0, you will have the statement that the common entropy between x and y will be strictly greater than the entropy of the true confounder in triangle graph. Okay, so you would expect for small h of z that g of xy should be greater than h of z, relying on this theorem. We do have a conjecture. We don't have a proof of this yet, still, so very much open. Experimentally, I'm observing this. I don't know how to prove it. So let's say you have some generative model assumption as well. Let's say uniformly from simplex. Then I would like to say that any z that can deseparate or that can make x and y independent condition on z requires an entropy that scales with the entropy of the observed variables. So if we can establish this could be very useful, because then you can say anything strictly less than that, I can distinguish by just computing common entropy. Okay, and just is in quotation marks, but suppose you could do that. This is an open problem. Okay, so these are the theoretical results we have, right? How can we do this algorithmically? So for this, we propose an algorithm to estimate common entropy in practice. So I'm going to explain what that does. First, let's relax the problem a little bit. The problem is I want to minimize h of z. Searching over the joints q of x, y, z, such that q of x, y, z is a distribution, and it marginalizes to p of x, y. And conditional mutual information should be zero, right? But then let's relax it, say it's less than some delta. Okay? Still not easy. Let me relax it further. Let me take the constraint of mutual information, conditional mutual information, put it in my loss function. So my loss function is conditional mutual information plus entropy with some scaling coefficient beta.
Right.
Yes.
Can you go back one slide? I missed, what was the relaxation of the problem here?
So conditional mutual information equals zero is what is needed.
And you relax it to delta.
Yes. I mean, I don't even have to do this step, but just I wanted to slowly build up to adding it to the loss function. But this is slightly easier, right? It's a softer set than strictly. Condition dependence constraints are non-trivial varieties in the space. So let's relax it a little bit. Maybe it helps, right? But then I'm going to even relax further. I will put it in my objective function. So now what can I do? This is some detail. I need to just search over Q of z given x, y, because then I can just construct the join to be, by definition, Q of z given x, y times P of x, y, which will automatically marginalize to P of x, y. So I get rid of some constraints like this. Okay, and I have some variables, optimization variables, parameters Q of z given x, y. And let's assume finite cardinality for all these variables. And we have some constraints. So that's just usual stuff. Now, what can we do to minimize this loss function? Still, I need to search over this Q of z given x, y. And still, this is a non-convex problem. Okay? So looks like it's all bad news. So we are going to take the following approach. Let's try to characterize the stationary points of this loss function. And then try to cook up an algorithm that will converge to some stationary point. And hopefully that will be a good stationary point, right? Hopefully the global minimum or maybe local minimum of some sort. So if you take the partial derivative of this with respect to my optimization parameters, Q of z given x, y, set it to zero, then you automatically recover an update equation that, if you apply repeatedly, will converge to a stationary point of this loss function, okay? So this is very much in similar spirit with, if you are familiar, Blautori-Motta algorithm, EM, obviously, and information bottleneck principal algorithms. So this would be the, it doesn't matter, but this would be the update rule, and then you marginalize, and then you repeat, okay, after some random initialization. So it's a very simple algorithm. What can you prove about this algorithm? Now, again, the general question is open, but we can prove some things. Of course, stationary points, this is not difficult. Of latent search are stationary points of the loss function. We can also show for a particular value of beta, the latent search, this algorithm converges to a local minimum or a saddle point. So it doesn't converge to a local maximum. So that we can eliminate. Okay, so big picture. Our goal here with this loss function is to discover a fundamental trade-off that we conjecture that there's a fundamental trade-off here between the complexity of the latent variable measured by h of z, versus how much of the dependence it can explain away, measured by conditional mutual information between x and y, given z. Okay? So we believe there's a fundamental trade-off here that's not yet discovered. And let's see what our algorithm can do to discover part of this relation. So for each value of beta, this will recover a point in this plane of h of z versus conditional mutual information. So here is one example run of our algorithm. As you increase beta, you are forcing h of z to be smaller and smaller, and allowing conditional mutual information to be larger and larger. And the other way around, if you decrease beta, you're allowing larger h of z. So this is giving you some trade-off region between these two dimensions. Any questions so far? So how would you use this output of this algorithm to estimate common entropy? You would simply take the point that touches x equals 0 line the first time. Right? That's the model that your algorithm was able to recover that makes x and y independent, given z, with the smallest h of z. Right? And how would I use this for causal discovery? That fits in very easily. You just run the algorithm, apply this step, let's say a variant of this step, to estimate common entropy. And if the common entropy is smaller than, let's say, some threshold, minimum of h of z, h of x, h of y, or some scaled version of that, again, we don't have the theoretical guarantees for that, but some heuristic, output the triangle graph, otherwise output, output the latent graph, otherwise output the triangle graph. Okay, if common entropy is large, I'll say it must be triangle graph. If it's small, it must be the latent graph. Okay, so here are some typical outputs of the algorithm. This is the ground truth. And then this is what you would get running the algorithm on random initializations. In practice, what I need to do, I need to set an independence threshold. Let's say condition much information less than 0.005 means condition independence for me, just like picking p-value, right? And I would like to also set a threshold for entropy using, let's say, minimum of h of x, h of y. When you have this ground truth graph, you'll get a picture like this. The algorithm will recover a lot of solutions in this green region with small conditional multi information and small entropy. But if you randomly pick a distribution from this graph, this is going to be the typical output of your algorithm. Same thresholds, no model is recovered in this green region. So there is no feasible model that fits to your data, that makes x and y independent given z, and that has entropy of at most minimum of h of x, h of y. Okay? Okay, so there is one more application in the paper. I'm going to just very briefly mention it. In the finite samples, you can also use this to sort of correct, and again, this is also empirical, no theory here, sort of correct the issues with constraint-based methods. Constraint-based methods tend to over-sparsify the graph, because it will think things are independent because there are not enough samples to establish dependence, right? So what this can do is it can check whether the entropy of the separating set is large enough to actually de-separate the two variables. So what I mean by that is I'll observe x and y independent given z in my statistical test. I will compute common entropy, and I will check whether common entropy is greater than h of z or not. If common entropy is greater than h of z, this is not possible. By definition of common entropy, I shouldn't be able to separate x and y using this z. So I decline this independent statement and I move on. Okay, this does seem to help in practice a little bit, at least for this data set, when you get a denser graph. Again, the exact details are not important, but that's another application. Okay, to conclude, information theoretic measures can help causal discovery, can enable causal discovery under the given appropriate assumptions. I talked about non-negative rank. I talked about common entropy. There is also minimum entropy couplings that I didn't talk about that also comes up in a different context. For this problem, more information theory research is needed to improve this entropy causal line of work. For example, can we compute common entropy approximately? Can we prove approximation guarantees? These are very difficult problems. And the general case of larger graphs is also open here, right? So here are some references. This is just paper 3. The others are, we have a suite of papers on this problem. X causes Y or Y causes X, right? So now you want to distinguish these two cases with no confounder. There is where the minimum entropy couplings also come into play, and some of the references on that are here. Okay, so I'll stop here. Thank you for listening. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
There's one there, I think.
Why don't we start with David?
So Rob asked about the application of semi-definite programming to classical problems and for any integral Rennie entropy. You are optimizing a polynomial function over a semi-algebraic variety, so you should be able to write down an SDP hierarchy for that immediately for every integral Rennie entropy.
Why is it polynomial?
Well, because...
For Rennie, I see. Yeah. I see. Not for Shannon.
That's interesting or not, but...
I see, okay, interesting, yeah.
Potentially interesting, then we can talk about that in the breakout session.
I see, so you are just saying I can get rid of the log in Rennie entropy expression and optimize inside.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Just
makes sense.
Optimize the p's power of the p norm.
Yeah,
which is that
right.
The polynomial, and then.
That's an interesting question. I didn't think about it. Thank you. I'll look into that. Yes.
Can you briefly say, at the very end, you mentioned distinguishing x cause y from y cause x. What's the idea of the entropic technique for doing that? What's the signature of the causal direction?
Good. So there the question is this. I don't know if Zoom folks can see this, but x to y, right? Now, what I'm seeing here is there is also a latent variable here. Although we don't call it latent, we call it exogenous. So the exogenous variable comes in here, right? And then it's supposed to be independent from x. Now the idea is that suppose in the true model, h of e is small, same assumption. Can I somehow detect this, first of all? The second thing is, can I show that for most models, when I try to fit in the wrong direction, I need some e tilde, right? This e tilde will have a larger entropy, scalingly larger entropy than h of e. That we can actually show. We can show that for support size, we can show it for Shannon entropy. And we can show it even for this. So we can show this. If h of e is little of log log n, then in the backward direction, it's going to be, I think, omega log log n. So we can get some sort of a tight bound as well. Now, you can also perhaps do better, but this is what we have currently.
And you're not making any additional assumptions like additive noise or anything like that?
No, this is all categorical. Sure. Yeah. So we have a similar assumption, generative model assumption. It's not you can adversarially choose where this is false, right? So, but if you randomly pick the distributions, if you randomly pick the SCM in some sense, again, a general position argument, with high probability, this is going to be true. So this is a with high probability statement. And then you can ask with high probability with respect to what? And so here, the thing that scales, that should scale for me is the support size of x. Let's say, for simplicity, is the same as y, that's n. So if entropy is small compared to the support of x and y, then you can recover the true causal direction. So this is the other set of results I didn't touch today. These are.
Which paper is that?
That's everything except 3 on that problem. So we have more results on that, but I thought this would be more suitable for this workshop.
I have a question. So you mentioned this conjecture that the entropy of the deseparating variable would mm-hmm. scale as the entropy of, yeah, exactly,
yes.
This one. So you said that this is motivated by numerical evidence. So is this numerical evidence like what you showed? So like just distinguishing between a common cause and like a common cause and a directed arrow? Or is this for like any, these, like did you also check, you know, like more complicated DAGs?
No, this I'm just, no. Just very basic. Two variables, triangle graph, z causes x, z causes y, x causes y.
Okay.
That's it. So now randomly sample distributions and test this conjecture. So that's what I'm saying. This seems to hold very strongly under the generative model assumptions we are making, but we don't have a technical handle on how to prove this yet.
Okay.
Yeah?
Rather computational question. How, when you're calculating the conditional mutual information, you're calculating it from your data, right? So
conditional mutual information, you're not calculating from data because you don't have z. You only have x and y. You need to recover a z from which you can, if you want, compute conditional mutual information. So you need to construct the joint on 3 variables first, but you're only given the 2 of them. So it's not something you can read from the data.
I see.
There must be a probability statement missing there in the conjecture,
right? This should be with high probability, yes. Yes, this should be with high probability, yes, absolutely.
Otherwise it doesn't make sense.
No, adversarially you can kill this, of course, yes. Thank you, yeah. No, but here you are right. With our probability should be there still. Yes, you're right.
One more question. Every time you use conditional mutual information, It was the one defined in terms of Shannon entropies. Did I miss a point in your talk where you were using any entropy besides Shannon entropy?
Yeah, so
is it all Shannon entropy?
No, so the support size is essentially Rain 0, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
I was saying the H of Z, H alpha of Z is small. Let's say that's how I start. And then you pick alpha. If you pick alpha 0, that's support size. So there I have a theorem.
Right.
If you pick alpha 1, I have theorem for binary. Not the most satisfying theorem, because I would like to be able to say that without taking a limit, as HZ goes to 0, which I don't have. But I have some theorem, but I don't have the general result there. Then you can ask alpha equals 0.5. What happens? I don't know.
Now I understand. Thank you.
Yeah, Konishimochi formation is always the same. It's because to establish X in prime Y given Z, that doesn't change.
And I think also Rainy mutual information is not super well defined.
Why is that?
Because you have like 3-4 equalities for the definition of mutual information, right? You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Divergence, the sum of different Shannon entropies, etc. But when you switch to Rainy entropy, they stop being equal to each other.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, so you cannot factorize Rainy mutual information as entropies. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can still define it, but
yeah.
then
yes.
It is unclear.
Okay, let's thank Murad again.
Thank you.